from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk, and today I'm going to talk about what is probably the biggest issue that's out there. I certainly talked in the last STRAT about it and some other things, but I really need to focus on what's dominating the news, if you will, and that's the Gaza peace agreement, ceasefire, the release of live Israeli hostages back to Israel, and of course, a number of Palestinian prisoners, a lot of Palestinian prisoners got released by Israel. And then what's ahead with this rather momentous turn of events? 2 weeks ago, I think everyone would have said this just couldn't happen. In fact, a week ago was dubious if anything like this was going to happen, and it happened. And it's really something to see. It is truly a moment to say something about how quickly things could change and how fortunate it is now that we're not discussing a huge Israeli military offensive, clearing street by street, building by building, Gaza City, increasing that toll of Palestinian residents, that death toll, the toll of suffering, injured, that would have taken place had that continued as it was going. And no doubt it would have turned up more Israeli hostage bodies. I have no doubts that Hamas, when cornered, would turn around and kill the hostages they held. So we are very fortunate that we are where we are, that this thing came about. Now, this is a result of some awful hard bargaining with all sides. And frankly, from what I can tell, some pretty coercive tactics in bargaining. I give some credit to the Trump administration with all the cordiality of Bibi Netanyahu's trip to Washington and basically doing that joint press conference where they talked about the 20-point peace plan proposal and everything else. There was a lot of arm twisting that was going on as well. And when President Trump sent out that thing publicly, very publicly, on his social media saying Bibi Netanyahu stopped the bombing, that's pretty much an information operation, if you will, that kind of painted Bibi Netanyahu into a box where he basically either had to go along or risk losing a lot more by crossing the United States. So that was happening. And then I want to say there was a lot going on with behind the scenes that we're finding more about, where Turkey and various Arab states, Qatar, Egypt, but also others, were putting phenomenal pressure on Hamas to accept a deal to release the hostages and making it very clear that there was a road to nowhere. If they continued with this war, that they would lose support, that's implied with that, that they would lose support from all these states, and that this was the best deal that they were ever going to get. And so Hamas agreed to it, and here we are. And at this point, it's interesting to see this. Now, it's not just Hamas. See, I remember there's other groups with Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, PFLP, which nobody hears much about. The Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine. All this is going on, and they have to get them to agree to go along with this as well. And so there's a lot that we can sit there and say, this is quite the accomplishment, but getting to phase two of this agreement is probably going to be the much bigger, tougher negotiation. And that's where they are now. And from what I've heard, Steve Witkoff, President's envoy, and others are staying in Sharm el-Sheikh, in Egypt, still working on getting that agreement put in place. And it's going to be tough. And the devil is truly in the details on this. Now, phase one is the release of the Israeli hostages. Part of phase one that Hamas has agreed to, that they are not fulfilling as agreed to, is releasing the bodies of those hostages that died or were killed, I should say. And so far, just a few have been handed over. And it was anticipated that, frankly, they weren't being centrally held or controlled, and that there might be a problem finding the remains of some of the hostages. No doubt some of them were buried when the tunnels collapsed or something like that. So it may be some time, but Hamas has got to make a good faith effort to try and get those remains returned as quickly as possible. And that's something, there's already calls out there saying Hamas has reneged on the agreement just because of the deceased hostages repatriation issue. So that's a big issue right there. Now, phase two requires disarming and demilitarization of Hamas. And that's something that goes to the core identity of what Hamas is. They see themselves as a resistance group. They are military, paramilitary, certainly meet every litmus test for terrorism, if you will. And they are an armed movement that has been dedicated since its founding in 1987 to the destruction of Israel. And by the way, I've still not heard them come back and change that posture. I have not heard them come back and say, we recognize Israel. We want to peacefully coexist with Israel. I have not heard them say anything like that. They are still dedicated to the destruction of Israel. And certainly Israel does not miss that little nuance, if you will, in the ideology and the goal of Hamas. It also requires Hamas to relinquish any governance rule. And this is a big one. Hamas has ruled literally for, I want to say, about 17, 18 years in Gaza. When Israel pulled out of Gaza, the thought was that the Palestinian Authority would come in and fill that leadership or fill that governance vacuum, which they initially did. But the Palestinian Authority, which is the successor to Fatah or the Palestinian Liberation Organization, I should say, they are notoriously inept, notoriously cronyistic, corrupt, and they just didn't have the trust and confidence of Palestinians. And whereas they're more accepted on the West Bank, they were not really accepted that well in the Gaza Strip. As a result, there was an election, and Hamas won the election. And in the spirit of one man, one vote, one time, which is mostly men voting, or primarily men voting, in some cases only men voting, and they have an election, and one group gets in power. Once they're in power, there's no more elections. That's what happened in the Gaza Strip. Okay, so the question is, what is going to happen? Well, I would point out that the Palestinian Authority has recognized the role of Prime Minister Tony Blair as part of this interim government that's going to take place. In the current proposal, there is supposed to be a peace board. President Trump has said he would step forward and lead it with Tony Blair at his side. I don't know if that's going to be what they ultimately decide upon, but at some point in there, the decision was they're supposed to set up some sort of technocratic. Technocratic means that they deal specifically with the details of running the Palestinian territory, the Gaza Strip, as opposed to all the politics and everything around that governance role, that there would be a technocratic Palestinian governing body that would oversee Gaza. And they would play a key role in the rebuilding of Gaza. And Gaza right now is just devastated. They got to pretty much rebuild the entire Gaza Strip. Now, the Palestinian Authority is still a question mark. They are the de jure body, if you will, that represents Palestinians. They are recognized certainly by the State of Israel as the de jure body of representing Palestinians. And that would seem to be a logical fit for this technocratic government in Gaza. But keep in mind, they were rejected almost two decades ago by Gazans, and they have a lot to do. They have to, as some have said, radically transform the Palestinian Authority in order to be capable of stepping into this role. The Gazans have some tough times ahead. They are virtually in ruins. There is no significant security presence on the ground except for these Hamas fighters who have suddenly popped up and started asserting themselves as the de facto security force across the Gaza Strip. Now, maybe that's a little bit better than just sheer anarchy, and I would point out that in some of the areas where there are established armed clans and other groups that are not associated with Hamas or are opposed to Hamas, that there have been some very pitched gunfights, and there is a very distinct possibility that the Gaza Strip, while this is going on, could devolve into a mini civil war situation with all these different armed groups there until there is an outside peacekeeping force that is put on the streets, and that's got to be worked out. But there is no significant force there right now, and then that peacekeeping force is going to be absolutely integral to disarming Hamas and PFLP and PIJ. They got to figure out among the many things that have to happen. And this is part of the mission of CENTCOM's, what they call a Civil Military Coordination Center, a CMCC, and there's supposed to be 200 U.S. service members dedicated to running the CMCC, but they've got to work on the housing of the Palestinians. Aid is rolling in at a rather rapid rate, although if you look at some of the trucks, by the time the trucks get to their destinations, the flatbed trucks, there's not a lot of left on the flatbed because people have jumped on the back and taken stuff and thrown it out to the crowd, basically filched what was on the truck. So getting aid to the Palestinians who need it is still going to be a challenge. One of the things kind of interesting is they pushed up front the need to start educating the children. Palestinians have gone for literally 2 years without school. And it is absolutely critical that they develop some sort of normalcy, get the kids in the classrooms, start, give them some daily routine. And so you're probably going to see a big push to set up these probably tent schools or something like that, where they can get them back in doing stuff. And then also by having them in school, free up their parents a little bit more to work on the clearing and rebuilding and all the things that have to happen in the Gaza Strip. One of the things that Israel has brought up over and over again is that for most of the last two decades, Hamas has been radicalizing a generation and inculcating them with the ideology about destroying Israel, about forcing the Jews of Israel into the sea, or basically conducting a massive genocide. I got a view of what that looked like during the October 7th attacks. And so there is a need to reverse that psychological operation by Hamas, that propagandizing, that brainwashing, if you will, that's taken place over so long. There is a need to turn that around. And so they got to figure out how that will happen. And that will probably go hand in hand with restarting the schools as well. They got to restore water, power, sewage, sanitation, all those inglorious things that go into running a place where people live and work. They have to create the conditions, and this is a big one, that will invite investment into rebuilding the Gaza Strip. As long as there's fighting, as long as there's an armed Hamas running around and PFLP and everything else, PIJ, as long as this threat remains, you're not going to see countries like the UAE and Saudi Arabia and others pouring in the hundreds of billions of dollars that have to be invested in rebuilding the Gaza Strip. So to some extent, you literally just have to, Hamas has got to realize, and certainly all the Palestinians there will quickly figure out, that until Hamas goes along with this thing, they're not going to be able to return to significant homes or a normal life because the conditions aren't there to make it happen. Now, putting the peacekeeping force inside Gaza and developing a professional Gazan police force are pretty big. Reports are that training for a Palestinian police force has already begun. There are also reports that basically Israel's been identifying Palestinians both inside Gaza and outside Gaza that will manage core functions like sanitation, water, power, things like that, that they are already putting in place those folks that will step in and do that technocratic role of actually getting these vital services redone. Now, how will Hamas and its allied groups be disarmed? It's inconceivable that it won't happen until a peacekeeping force really gets in there and makes it happen. And then they're going to have to try and figure out how they do it. I just don't see Hamas willingly or Hamas fighters willingly just handing over their arms. There might be something that sounds a little crass, but it's worked in the past, whereas you put a big bounty on certain weapons. In other words, if you turn in a AK-47, you might get $5,000, $10,000, or $20,000 for that, or a machine gun or something like that. And what that does is it financially incentivizes everyone there to turn that stuff in. In fact, it incentivizes people to steal weapons from Hamas and turn them in and get the money as well. So that could be how they do it. And then the question is, what type of future economy will the Gaza Strip represent. And that's where they're going to have to get some economists and others to sit down and figure it out. We saw that thing where early into the, about a year ago or so, there was talk about the Gaza Riviera plan, where they would turn into this beautiful resort area and all this stuff. I don't know if that's really going to happen, but they are going to have to figure out how is the Gaza Strip going to generate revenue? What can it do? It has a lot of people. It has a very good location. The question is, what can it do to attract investment dollars? What would make people do things, whether it's manufacturing or tourism or whatever, in the Gaza Strip? Well, that's going to be a big one. All right. Now, until that gets established, really, until they can figure out where this is going to go, you're really not going to see big money coming in there. So this could be a lingering crisis. This may not be the proverbial beginning of the end. All right. Although it's certainly being touted as that. It is definitely the end of the beginning, though. And it might be the beginning of the end, at least everything that we've known so far with the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And with that conflict being basically, if you will, ended, a new age of cooperation, if that's possible, that allows all the regional countries in the Middle East, with probably the exception of Iran, to start normalizing ties with Israel. Indonesia's president is reportedly going to Israel very soon, right after the Sharm el-Sheikh conference. And you could see the normalization of relations between the largest Muslim nation in the world and Israel. And that would certainly provide momentum for other countries in the region to do the same. Everyone's going to be looking very closely at what Saudi Arabia does. But one could say, and certainly Saudi Arabia could say, that this is a road to the recognition of the establishment of a Palestinian state, that Israel has done those things necessary to set the course for an establishment of a Palestinian state, and then put it on the Palestinians. It's up to the Palestinians whether they can organize themselves to set up a state. I could see something like that happening, where they do this thing where they normalize relations with Israel, get things rolling, but then also put a lot of pressure on the Palestinians to get their act together. And historically speaking, the Palestinians haven't been very good at getting their act together, so we'll see what comes of that. So we'll see if this really does cause a peace to break out all over. And one of the things I would point out is that in the background, this couldn't have occurred unless the Iran status in the region had been significantly diminished, as it has been, and its axis of resistance basically had the rug pulled out from under it, which has also happened as well. And I don't think the fall of the Assad government in Syria was an insignificant part of that. That was a huge part of that. So we'll see. But we got to see what happens up north with Hezbollah. We're going to see what the Houthis do. We'll see what the Shiite militias in Iraq do. And that will tell us if this thing has some real staying power. Thanks for listening to Strat. Please visit stratpodcast.com. You can also go to my YouTube site, Hal Kemper TV, and see many of my what become mini media appearances on various different networks. Thanks, and I hope you listen to the next one.